In her book, American Girls, Nancy Jo Sales writes these sobering words regarding what it's like to grow up as a girl in today's youth culture. The constant seeking of likes and attention on social media seems for many girls to feel like being a contestant in a never-ending beauty pageant in which they are forever performing to please the judges. Navigating life in our appearance-obsessed world is dangerous business for girls and boys, young and old alike. What are the messages our girls are hearing regarding their identity? How do these messages undermine their flourishing? And what can the home and church do to change the destructive trajectory our girls are on? We'll be talking about these questions and more with writer Heather Zeiger on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Well, welcome everybody to another episode of Youth Culture Matters. Walt Mueller here at CPYU, and in the studio with me is Chris Wagner. Chris, last episode, what was that, 80? 81.
81.
81, we had a chat with Chris Walker, a friend of mine here locally who has completed his doctoral work on how in youth ministry we can minister to boys to lead them to become godly men. And Chris did a great job on his doctoral work. We wanted to hear about that and some very practical things. So if you haven't tuned into that episode yet, go back and listen to episode 81 of the Youth Culture Matters podcast. And we thought we would follow it up with an episode on teen girls. And today, Jason's not with us, but I have Jody Chung here. Jody's joining us from Houston, where she is doing youth ministry at the West Houston Church of Christ. I've had the privilege of knowing Jody for several years now. She's participated in some of the symposiums we've done on biblical sexuality up at Gordon-Conwell and some other things over the years. She and her husband, Michael, their favorite place in the whole world is my favorite place in the whole world. That little spot, right, Jody, in Rockport, Massachusetts, where you stand on that ramp.
Yes.
And you
yes.
look out. And I was thrilled. I think, is that where you got engaged to Michael? Right there.
It is. That's where he proposed to me.
Yeah.
So, right in front of that little red.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Motif one. Yeah. You can go to my, I don't have it up now. It's usually on my Facebook page. It's my background picture. And I think you had it there as well, didn't you?
Or it's Michael, still there.
Yeah, it's still there. So if you check out our Facebook pages, you'll see that. But I didn't realize, every time I go up there, and I'm up there about a month a year, I stand on that spot, and I didn't realize. I knew there was something magical about it, but it wasn't until I heard that's where you guys got engaged that I realized just how magical it is. So, Jody, how long have you been at the church there in West Houston?
Oh, wow. I've been – actually, I'm sure there's a West Houston Church of Christ, and I'm sure it's an amazing church.
Oh, I said Church
part
of Christ,
West Houston Chinese Church.
You know what? I was at the West Houston Church of Christ just in the last few months, and that's why I said that. Sorry about that.
Likely.
Okay. What a mess up.
We'll get you an appointment later, Walt, after this podcast is over. So, West Houston Chinese Church, and I've been here for now 21 years.
Man.
I feel like, I'm growing up here, and I need to move out of the house soon. But anyway, I've been here for 21 years, and I've been doing youth ministry for the majority of my time here, either as a volunteer or on staff as the youth pastor here. It's been great.
So before we welcome in our guest for today, who we're going to talk to and talk about girls, I'm just curious, off the top of your head, what are some of the main issues you are seeing evolve with the girls that you're working with? And you've been there for 21 years, so you've probably seen loads and loads of changes in the culture of girls.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first thing I think of over the last two decades, it's still identity. My girls struggle with identity. Now, we have the added layer of a cultural component,
right,
being a bi-ethnic church. So they are fully American, but also fully Chinese. They bridge two cultures. So there's that part of it. But just, you know, growing up here in Houston, struggling with identity, who are they? I remember a girl just telling me flat, I'm like, how do you feel? And she's just, I'm just so confused. And I felt like that was a great answer to how girls feel nowadays. It's just confused. I think image continues to plague them, body image. It doesn't help that everyone has iPhones now. I'm struggling with not only how they look like in their like body image wise, but also how they appear when they run, when they do sports, how they fare academically, how they're perceived by friends in school, those kind of issues. And then I guess a third one actually be another eye, interests. I think all of my girls struggle with what should I be interested in? Is it okay for me to be really interested in what I'm interested in? Or do I have to change what I'm actually interested in to fit who I really want to be? So that kind of goes into image and identity. So, yeah. I think those things are constants.
Yeah, and we hear this all the time from everybody. In fact, this identity issue is just so huge. Every summer, I try to tackle one particular cultural issue, read widely, look at what's happening, and then develop responses that we can use in our families and ministries. And just about 2 weeks ago, I settled for this coming summer on the issue of identity, because that seems to be, man, that's a word, I've said this before, you know, Chris has heard me say this, that's a word that when I was a kid, we never used that unless we were talking about like a spy movie and someone who would, you know, shield their identity or put on a disguise or something like that. Now it's front and center as not just a word, but an issue among our girls. Well, that's why I'm glad today, Jody, you and I have the opportunity to have a conversation with Heather Zeiger. Heather is joining us from Texas as well. And Heather has an MS in chemistry from the University of Texas at Dallas and an MA in bioethics from Trinity International University. She is a freelance science writer and a research analyst with the Center for Bioethics and Human Dignity. Now, you may wonder why we're having Heather on to talk about girls. I encountered some of Heather's writing recently in an edition of Salvo Magazine. I'm not sure how many of our listeners are familiar with Salvo Magazine. We'll include a link to it. But this is a magazine I actually discovered while I was at Barnes & Noble and scanning the periodical racks, and I found this thing a few years ago and just pick it up constantly. There's some great articles, all from a Christian perspective, on issues and things that really matter, and Heather has written for them. So, Heather, welcome. I'm glad you're with us, and tell us about your cat, because we may hear your cat at some point here, right?
Yeah, it's good to be with you guys. And yeah, if you hear a cat meowing in the background, I have a dear, sweet, old, senile cat who is deaf. So hopefully she's placated right now. She kind of runs my place. So,
you know, as I get older, I hope my kids are as gracious and kind to me as you are to your cat. So, you know, as they describe me as senile and deaf. But
they'll
thanks,
placate you.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for joining us. So the article, and, you know, we've all had a chance to read it. I passed it on to Jody, and Chris has read it as well, so he may weigh in here. Actually, on the cover, there's the question, do you like me, on the cover of the winter 2018 edition of Salvo Magazine. And the article you wrote is called The Contradictory Worlds of Today's Teen Girls. What sparked your interest in this? I mean, what prompted you to write this particular article?
So I had written on some issues on technology. So part of bioethics is you're talking about how technology and society intersect. And in doing that, I kept coming across research saying that teen girls in particular are struggling with depression and anxiety and suicide ideation in astounding numbers, particularly since the smartphone became popular. And if you look, there's been a huge increase in just kind of mental health issues since around 2010 or so, which happens to be when Instagram was launched. And so there was that. And then I had come across a couple of articles. One of them, I believe it was in Time Magazine, that talked about the increased prevalence of young women getting cosmetic genital surgeries. And they're doing that to try to look the way that what they see in pornography. And I had just posted something on bioethics.com about female genital mutilation, which is, you know, this kind of human rights, it's a human rights violation. It's something that occurs in certain societies in, across the ocean, right? So it's something that is very distant from us, and how lots of people speak out against this, and this is a horrible human rights violation. And then I read this article about girls getting cosmetic genital surgery, and I'm like, how different is this really? I mean, we act as if these are two very different things. And then I started thinking about how are girls today living in some kind of contradictory world where, you know, you have pornography, which is very degrading and objectifying towards women. And then you have, you know, young women who can go to college, who can become an astronaut, you can become a scientist, you can become a Supreme Court justice. And so I started thinking through, wow, you know, there's some real contradictions going on here. Mm.
So you, one of the things you say in the article is that in both FGM, female genital mutilation, and labiaplasty, young girls are pressured by cultural forces to have themselves surgically altered so that they will be more sexually desirable to men. Work that out just a little bit more, you know, for people who aren't familiar with those things, because I'm sure there are people who are listening going, you got to be kidding me. Girls increasingly are doing this. In fact, you cite a statistic here. In the past 5 years in the U.S., gynecologists have reported an 80% increase in the number of requests for cosmetic vaginal surgery among girls under 18 years old.
Right. So the idea, I don't know if you've read about, like, female genital mutilation is this practice of, and not to go into detail, but it's a practice of basically removing or destroying parts of the genital area. And it's a way to basically practice control. It takes away all of any kind of sensations and sex. So this is practiced in certain sects of certain Muslim groups and certain groups predominantly in North Africa and certain other sections of the world. So the idea is that women are not marriageable if they haven't had this happen. So if they haven't had this procedure, and usually it's little girls around 8 years old that have this procedure. And the idea is that they're not desirable to men if they haven't had this procedure. Okay, so the UN has spoken out about this, and people are like, okay, this is not appropriate. Then we have cosmetic vaginal surgery, where young women are seeing what they see on pornography, and this is what men expect out of them. Young men expect out of them. And so they are trying to match that image so that they will not be rejected. And some of the consequences, so this is me, the medical ethicist, bioethicist talking here. So when we talk about risks versus therapy, this is a non-therapeutic surgery. It's cosmetic, but it's also very risky. It can develop scar tissue. You can have certain, you lose sensations in sex. You have many of the same effects as female genital mutilation. And all of this is so that they can look the way that they're expected to look based on what is seen on the internet.
Yeah. And Jody, feel free to weigh in with a question at any time.
Yeah.
Just interrupt. Do you have something?
Yeah. I did have a question that just came up. Like, do you think this is because over the last decade, the definition of sex is broadening and being redefined? We're introducing oral sex at a much younger age. It's considered more safe, that kind of sex. I mean, doesn't always result in some of the things that traditional forms of sexual activity result in. Do you think this is partly due to that?
Yeah, I think entire conceptualization of sex, definitions of sex. There are people that have a quote unquote intimate relationship and they never see each other in person. So cyber sex and that kind of thing. So yes, definitely. I think this has to do with a differing definition, particularly definitions that have to do with viewing someone on a screen or seeing what someone looks like. Right. I mean, we're talking about the awkward topic of labiaplasty, but I looked up a statistic just to get the most recent statistics, and John Hopkins reported, let's see, the American Society of Plastic Surgeons said there were 64,000 cosmetic surgical procedures performed on 13 to 19 year olds. And they are seeing an increasing number of these teens saying, I want to look good in a selfie, as their reason for getting cosmetic procedures, you know, like a rhinoplasty or some of these other things. So yeah, we're seeing a sexual component. We're seeing an image driven component. I think you're right that the concept of sex and what it is for, the idea, I don't even think it's really associated with intimacy as much as interaction. So yeah, I think you're right there.
The shift that you mentioned here, and I just thought this was a brilliant sentence, the way you put this together, it just pulls together so many of I think the pressures kids feel today, and then the result of that. You write, gifts and abilities are secondary to breasts and curves, because in this image-driven world, it's what's on the outside that counts. How else have you seen that manifested in the youth culture, or even in the adult culture? Because I think that's a big part of it. You reference back to, you know, the Kardashians and how we equate image with success. I mean, is there anything else that would be helpful for us on that?
Yeah, I think this is where things get very confusing for young women. So there was kind of this second wave feminism that said, hey, we need to value women for how smart they are, for how talented they are. You see this push right now for girls to go into STEM, for female athletes, athletic programs. So you see this, in theory anyway, this idea that women should be valued for so many other things than their appearance. And yet, you see on the internet, you see in Hollywood, you see that over and over again, women are valued if they're within a certain age range, which is about in your 20s, or if they can look like they're about in their 20s, and if they can present themselves as sexually attractive. And so it's one of those where, in one sense, you're supposed to, you know, be in AP classes, you're supposed to perform well, oh, but you need to look pretty doing it. And it's very difficult. I mean, I think a lot of girls have said just how much pressure they feel under to be perfect. It's as if we've added to the expectations rather than taken away some of these inappropriate expectations of you always have to look perfect and you always have to look pretty. And when I say we, I say the culture at large.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is good. I love this discussion. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Heather Zeiger. Heather's written an article that really takes us into the world of teen girls and some of the pressures they're feeling now. She's titled it The Contradictory Worlds of Today's Teen Girls. It's in the winter 2018 edition of Salvo Magazine, and I want to remind our listeners that everything that we mention here today, whether it be books, whether it be periodicals, whether it be articles, studies, whatever it is, Chris Wagner here is going to include on our cpyu.org homepage for this episode of the podcast. Just go and find it on cpyu.org. He'll include links to everything. So if you're listening on another podcast platform or provider, come back to cpyu.org, find the player there. Even if you listen elsewhere and scroll down underneath, you'll find links to everything. We'll be right back to continue this conversation. Are you interested in bringing CPYU to your church, school, or community? A big part of our ministry is the on-site seminars we conduct in dozens of settings every year. CPYU seminars are designed to encourage and educate your audience on a variety of youth culture issues. Every seminar is designed to be informative, practical, and hope-filled. If you want to learn more about our CPYU seminars, available speakers, and the many seminar topics and options in our growing seminar lineup, go to our CPYU homepage at cpyu.org. Click on the seminar option on the menu bar at the top of the page And you can learn more about how to schedule a CPYU speaker and seminar for your parents, youth workers, and educators. Well, welcome back to Youth Culture Matters. We're having a conversation here with Heather Zeiger, and it's about an article she wrote on the contradictory worlds of today's teen girls. I love hearing her perspective because she's a bioethicist. And sometimes for those of us who are parents and youth workers, it's just good to get perspective from people who are followers of Christ who also have skills and abilities and interests in areas that we may be a little lax or uninformed. So this has been really helpful. Before the break, we were chatting with Heather about, you know, some of these contradictory things that are taking place and the pressures on girls. And Jody indicated she wanted to follow up with a comment there. Go ahead, Jody.
Yeah, Walt had read a quote from Heather's article about how in this image-driven world, it's what's on the outside that counts. And, you know, I know that, but I was surprised. I had a conversation with my daughter's, one of my friends, and she hangs out with our family a lot. I have a six-year-old daughter. And I was just sharing with my friend, who's around my age, you know, I'm really kind of concerned about my daughter, Noelle, and her ability to learn certain things and to keep up academically. And I'm already thinking about what school she should go into. And then her first response, and this friend of mine is in corporate America. She is managing a group of people in her department. She's in finance and she works 80 hours a week, that kind of job in society. And she said, Jody, you know, all that matters is how Noelle looks in the end. And I felt like that was so sobering and so sad, but it just completely confirms what you're talking about, is that from an early age, teens, girls are seeing this as truth, that image counts more than what's in their brain. And it's not just staying there at the teenage level. It's moving on into adulthood, that even women in corporate America can make statements like that, that, yeah, in the end, from my experience, all that matters is what you look like.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting with our Digital Kids Initiative. One of the things I talk about a lot is when I'm talking to parents and youth workers is the selfie culture. And one of the realities is that, you know, the social capital, obviously, is the likes and the comments, you know, OMG, you look so hot, that sort of thing. And certainly, you know, Heather references here in the article Nancy Jo Sales in her book American Girls, Social Media and the Secret Lives of Teenagers, which, by the way, I recommend that everybody in youth ministry and every parent read. It is a sobering look. And in fact, that book for me personally and for many of the youth workers who and parents who I know were reading it at our recommendation, everyone came back and said, it's not that it's a difficult book to read in terms of its syntax and that sort of thing. You've just got to put it down because it's so overwhelming as you read what's going on with these girls. But one of the things that I came away with from that I share in our Digital Kids Initiative is, you know, my image or my sense of self, my identity, totally is weighted on one thing, and that's my appearance and what others think of it. And this, Heather, is, I think, what you're getting at. You talk in the article a little bit about this clash of worldviews, this secular worldview that's out there. And, in fact, you know, I know you reference here in other places as well Nancy Piercy's work. Do you want to talk just a little bit about that and how it plays in? Because if we're going to address this, we have to understand worldviews, things that we may not readily see and be able to discern worldviews, and push back on them in our own lives, how we think of ourselves, where we find our identity, which you've both mentioned is part of our adult world now. And then certainly with our families and our youth groups, we've got to understand this and debunk the lies that are out there that we just assimilate. So go ahead and respond to that, Heather.
Yeah, sure. So if you haven't read Love Thy Body, it's one of these books that seems to be talking about a lot of different topics, but the reality is all those topics are related because of an underlying worldview. So whether the topic is transgenderism or homosexuality or euthanasia or abortion, these all have this underlying mindset that a lot of times we live it out without understanding that that's how we're thinking. And so Piercy points out that this secular worldview kind of, she's a philosopher, so she traces it back to this kind of Cartesian dualism idea where there's this top story and this bottom story. So there's, to use the philosophical terms, there's Gnosticism and materialism. Gnosticism is the idea that what is what you think, what you know, how you feel is valued, and the body is, in the Gnostic view, it's an hindrance. It's an unclean vessel. The bottom story, so this is the secular worldview, that bottom story is materialism. So all there is the physical world, and that's it. We're just a bunch of chemicals. So in the secular mindset, there's the upper story and the lower story, Gnosticism, materialism, that I'm gonna simplify, because we're not all philosophers, and say the upper story is feelings, or how I personally feel, who I think I am in my head, versus the lower story, my physical body. And what matters is how you feel, and your body is just a means to that end. You know, do I feel like I'm a male? Well, but I'm in a female body, my body is hindering me, so I'm just gonna fix it. I'm going to do whatever I can to make sure that I feel okay. So what this does is this separates us. So this means that our mind or our thoughts, our feelings are separate from our body. And what you see going on, whether it's sexting, whether it's the hookup culture or anything like that, you see girls using their bodies, however you use them, as a means to an end, to feel good, to feel accepted, to feel light, to not feel lonely, to not feel rejected, to help with these feelings. And since the body is just, you know, different people have used, you know, it's just a meat package. It's just a bunch of chemicals. It doesn't matter. That's a secular worldview. And the problem with these secular worldviews is they're not actually livable. That's why we're seeing this increase in depression and anxiety and suicide ideation, is because you can't actually live that out. What you do with your body does affect who you are, how you see yourself. It affects your emotions. It affects your mental health. And it goes the other direction. Your, you know, how you see yourself, how you're feeling, your depression, anxiety can affect your physical health. But when we're dealing with teen girls, we see a lot of this idea of, oh, it doesn't matter what I do. It doesn't matter how I'm treating my body, as long as I'm getting the emotional results.
Now, how does that play out with kids who grew up in Christian homes or kids who are involved in youth groups? I'm sure, Jody, you're seeing it. I mean, we see it with kids. You know, functionally, I think in many ways that's how we live today in the church. And it's not just our teenagers. It's adults as well. There's just this total lack of integration. And certainly throughout history, Gnosticism has been a heresy that has had to be addressed over and over and over again throughout the history of the church. It sneaks in. Are we seeing it, you know, functionally in the church? I mean, are you folks seeing this among the girls that you know and that you're working with? Because I know you both work with teenagers, you know, in your church, obviously.
Yeah, for girls, if we want to focus on that, just this whole idea that how I feel matters most is something that is just an inherent to them. I think that's the culture we're being brought up in. And so, yes, I can do whatever I want with my bodies to make sure that I feel good about myself. And I used that actually growing up to justify things that I did, you know, going on a very low calorie diet or, you know, exercising a whole bunch, because in my mind that was okay. As long as I felt good about myself. And so I think that's what plays into justifying some of the things that they do over the internet, the ways that they behave around the opposite sex, and now exploring transgender issues. I continually come across that argument, is that, well, God gave us our brains, and it's part of our soul, our minds, and how we feel. And if I can change my body, then I what's wrong with that? But there's no counter argument of, well, why don't I change my attitude or my perspective or my underlying worldview behind, you know, these actions.
Yeah. And that's, by the way, you know, when I hear Jody say that, I'm going, okay, parents and youth workers, we have to be cognizant of this. You know, thank goodness people like Nancy Piercy and Heather Zeiger are raising these issues for us and helping us see what's playing out on the landscape of the lives of both our girls and our boys, and even us as adults in the church. But how do we now push back? How do we correct this? You know, so, you know, definitely. Heather, just to backpedal a little bit, to backtrack, the question I just asked Jody, you know, I ask you as well. I mean, how are you functionally seeing this worked out? And are there any ways, you know, you as a bioethicist, I would think in your work with teenage girls, you're just, man, you're pushing back. So just some ways to do that.
So you mentioned identity earlier. And I think one of the things, and this is going off of what Jody said as well, the assumption is your identity is only in your head or how you feel or what you're thinking. It is as if your body then needs to be subject to exacting that identity. In other words, I feel like I'm this. So maybe for my bioethics research, I wrote my capstone project on performance enhancement in sports, which you would think this isn't related to this, but oh yes, it is. In my head, I am a star baseball player, but my body isn't cooperating. So what do? I do whatever I can to my body to make sure that it is helping me have the identity I want. Okay, so this is the same with girls. In their head, this is the identity that they want. And so the body, therefore, it's in a sense, it's a very degrading view of the body, in that the body is just a slave to whatever it is that the identity that I want to adopt. And so this is kind of, okay, so I'm dealing with junior high girls. So am I unpacking this in a philosophical way? No, but are we kind of saying, you know, who you are is, the Christian worldview is very holistic in that it's, you know, it's your heart, it's your mind, it's your body, you know, the doctrine of the resurrection kind of, you know, shows us that, no, God really values your body. That's part of your identity. You know, warts and all, this is part of who you are. For whatever reason, he made you with the talents, gifts, and abilities that he made you. And that includes your physical talents, gifts, and abilities.
Why aren't girls just logging off? Why, if it's so destructive and so all-consuming, why aren't they logging off? I mean, just let's walk away from it.
Yeah, so I think that that's a good question, in that from an outsider looking in, you're just like, this is dysfunctional relationships. The problem is, for a lot of teens, this is where social interactions happen. In Nancy Sales' book, she mentions that some teens say 95% of my social interactions are online. My husband is a teacher at a private school. And he was taking roll one day, and he's like, oh, where's so-and-so? She's not here for the test. And the kids knew that she woke up sick that morning because she posted it on social media. And so they were able to tell him what was going on with her before he knew that she was sick. You know, so this is how they interact. And if they're not on social media, for some of them, they feel like they don't exist. They feel like they're outside of the group. They feel isolated. So it's not a simple issue of just log off, because for them, they're missing out on a huge social component of the junior high school experience, of the teenage experience.
Jody, have you had girls log off at all, or you know, have you created at least safe spaces where they can log off periodically and experience something much more healthy relationally, where perhaps this horrible paradigm that we're now living in, you know, this schema that we choose, this worldview way of living, can be undone at least experientially for a short period of time. They can taste something better than what it is they've been, you know, so to speak, eating and chewing on and living out.
Well, I think it certainly takes a village to help that happen. I mean, I'm constantly teaching parenting classes and talking about this issue, and that's where I'm targeting mostly is the families. I'm trying to tell parents and expose them to realities and give them knowledge like we're doing on this podcast. And I think parents are listening and they're creating opportunities for kids to talk at home and have certain rules in place about phone usage that I think is helpful. But, you know, I actually had a chance to interact with Nancy Jo Sales at a conference one time. And I asked her, I know your research is across all ethnicities, it's broad, but do you see this happening in the ethnic church? I'm in the Asian American church. And she said, I had my own answer in mind. And she said, actually, it's less in the Asian American. I said, that's what I thought, because I don't see it as much as maybe somebody at the local Baptist church, you know, that is more predominantly Caucasian. I don't see as much of the sexting or the sexual exploration, definitely not some of the genital changes, mutilation, things like that, or just surgeries that people might be exploring. I don't see that as much in my youth group. There's some. And so I think my question for Heather would be, but what I do see are tendencies away from faith, hope, and love. I do see movement towards suicide and depression. And so the issues are there. It just may not be expressed in some of the ways that I see in your article. But I do want to, if we're talking about, you know, practical things that help, I'm still trying to figure out how to help these girls have good mental health and what to do when they encounter these overwhelming feelings of isolation and confusion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. There's things parents can do. There's things that us as youth workers can do. I think for parents, and this gets me in trouble a little bit, but I think parents themselves need to log off. So keep in mind that a lot of our teens today, when they were young, were competing with mom and dad's smartphone for attention. And so now what are they doing online? They're competing for attention. That's not to blame the parents on this, but it's to say when you are looking at your phone instead of having a conversation or paying attention, however, whatever age, teen, toddler, you're communicating something. And, you know, Jody, you know this because you've worked with teens. What you do speaks so much louder than what you say. You can spend 3 hours on a lesson plan and really, you know what you do is what they're gonna remember. And so one thing parents can do is put their smartphone away. I'm a big fan of having dinner every night together. And you know what, you look at some of these Silicon Valley billionaires who are making money off of this technology, and they do this with their family. Bill Gates, you know, reportedly very strict on the technology that he allowed his kids to use. No tech at the dinner table. They had dinner together every night. So these are practical things that I think build relationships. And when you are available to talk, then these girls can have a conversation, a real life conversation, where they can voice, you know, I'm feeling this way, I'm feeling pressured this way, or you know what, I know this girl who is cutting herself because she thinks she's a failure and she's making all A's and is gorgeous. You know, you have to pull yourself away and make yourself available. And with teenagers, sometimes that means you've got to make a little bit of an effort, or you've got to be willing to be a little awkward because they're not, and so that you can be available when they start struggling with this, because they're going to struggle because of the culture we live in. So yeah. I think that's a great place to start.
Good. Good. I'm loving this. And we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get a little more. We're starting to delve into the practical, the responses here. That's always so important. But we're going to look at some ways for parents and youth workers to push back on this and to really facilitate. That's what we're called to do, right? Facilitate the spiritual, emotional, relational, physical health of our girls. We want to see them flourish, and our boys as well. So we'll come back and we'll spring off of that. Stick with us. Here at the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, we want to help you stay up to date on today's youth culture. One of the tools we've developed to keep you current is our weekly Youth Culture e-update. Delivered to you by email, our Youth Culture e-update comes to you in a format that allows you to easily scroll through and quickly choose those stories and resources that will be most helpful to you in your particular setting. To sign up for this free resource, go to our website at cpyu.org, scroll down to the bottom of the page, and enter your email address in the tab marked e-update sign up. It's that simple. Well, this is our last segment in this conversation with Heather Zeiger, and I'm so happy that Jody Chung is with us. We're talking about some of the pressures that are out there, you know, just implicit and even explicitly in the worldview, the cultural narrative that kids are living out today as a result of being on social media and being online, and how that's shifting our view of self and our view of others and even our behaviors related to that. And Heather, we were talking a little bit about some of the ways that we can start to respond practically. And during the break, Jody had a question, a thought, and I thought it'd be good for her to voice that again so that you have a chance to respond. We can interact on that. Go ahead, Jody.
Well, Heather, I really appreciate just your contribution to the kingdom in this area with this article. And it makes me think about the Me Too and the Church Too movement. And my question is, how can churches help prevent this, help address it, help avoid what's going on in our youth groups and actually in our young adult groups as well? If we see that, if a parent, a pastor, not just a youth pastor, a congregational pastor sees behaviors online or sees it in their own children, what can the church do about it to prevent perpetuating the types of worldview and actions and behaviors that we're talking about in this podcast?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, if you think about it, we are handing kids this very powerful thing. We're handing them the internet in their pocket or in their purse, right? But we're not giving them instructions on how to use it. We kind of just hand it to them, and we kind of assume kids know how to use these things better than we do sometimes. But the reality is that they don't know how to use it. They don't know what's best interactions. And so I am a big fan of teaching Christian virtues, teaching classical virtues. Like, you know, there is another person on the other side of this, and this person has inherent dignity and worth. Teaching virtues like moderation and self-discipline, teaching virtues like, you know, there's studies that show that girls don't experience such mental health issues if they are on social media for an hour or less a day. But then you see mental health problems when they're on social media for more than an hour. Well, what is that telling you? That there can be a healthy way to interact, to use social media for good social interactions, but there needs to be moderation. There needs to be, I think, there needs to be accountability. Personally, I realized I was writing about technology, and I guess it was prideful. I was sitting here thinking, man, boy, these people really get addicted to this stuff. This sure is horrible. And I realized, you know what? I am having a problem with social media in that I would lose track of time and not realize how much I was using it. And so I set up accountability for myself with a real life person, you know, not an online, I'm not talking about an app, but having another person that says, hey, how much time did you spend on social media? What did you do on social media? And that's a great thing for us as youth workers, youth pastors to have. And, you know, even with your peers to say, hey, we're going to agree to honor God in our social media interactions. I think that's something that churches can do. I think something that churches, both parents and those of us that work with teens and teachers, need to not be afraid to do is to call out bad behavior and to say, no, this is wrong. You realize what you're doing is, I mean, to say it like it is, that, you know, you're making and distributing child pornography, essentially. And Nancy Jo Sales says in American Girls, some of the young girls are like, you know, I don't want my parents to be my friend. I want them to make rules. I want the structure. I want somebody to tell me, hey, you're not allowed to go to that sleepover because, you know, there's going to be bad things happening. They want that. They sometimes act like they don't want that, but they do want to have that structure. They want to have that fallback to say, you know what, someone else is saying this isn't good. It's not just me trying to navigate this confusing moral ground by myself.
I love this. Just a couple of comments here. One would be this, and we alluded to this a little bit during the break. People didn't hear this. We were talking among ourselves during the break, and I want to go back to this. The calling out, you know, the calling it what it is. I mean, the church, we are called as parents who are the ones primarily responsible for the spiritual nurture of our kids, as pastors, as youth workers, as Christian educators, you know, to speak truth. And speaking truth, especially in a world where the narrative is controlled in so many ways by the lies, it's calling out the lies and offering the corrective. And I'm afraid, I mean, I'm seeing this more and more, and I'm a parent, so I know how this works, that we're afraid to offend, we're afraid to step on toes, we're afraid to, you know, lose the hearing that we may have, we're afraid to go backwards, we're afraid to love people enough to tell them the truth, and the truth is hard. And I know for me, if I am wandering, I need friends, I need, like you said, you know, Heather, accountability partners who step in and say, whoa, 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 you know, and we all need those people in our lives who are willing to be direct. You know, I remember my dad always saying, you know, the quickest way between two points is a straight line. And we wander all over the place because we're afraid to, you know, hurt kids. And you mentioned Nancy Jo Sales. I mean, she's very direct in her book in terms of calling out right and wrong. And I started to think when you mentioned that, Heather, that some of the people who have been most direct in terms of addressing some of the ways that we take good things and turn them into idols and the way that some of these tools we have are undermining our flourishing are not Christian people, perhaps, but they're people who would be coming at this from the standpoint of valuing the virtues, as you mentioned. And so they're not coming at it necessarily from a faith-based perspective. So immediately when you said that, you know, I thought right away of Jean Twenge and her work on narcissism and iGen and some of the negative things there. I think of Sherry Turkle and her work, you know, coming out of MIT and being very direct on this because they're seeing the outcomes. And they're just saying, not maybe from the perspective of, you know, a Christian world and life view. It's not, its origins are not in that, but they're seeing the negative part of this. Why don't we listen to this? Another one I think of is, and maybe, I don't know if you two are familiar with this, I know Chris and I are, Leonard Sachs in his book, The Collapse of Parenting, just calling out the lousy, lousy ways that we're doing things and our fear of, you know, like losing our kids as friends, perhaps. Maybe we want to be friends with our kids more than anything else. So I'm thinking of that. One more thing I'll mention here. I know I'm starting to, you know, get excited and preach a little bit. But, I mean, the two of you are hitting on some great things here. When you talked about virtues and accountability, Heather, I had a friend call me about a month ago. And he's been a friend for a long time, and we are now entering into a bit of an accountability relationship. Well, it is an accountability relationship where we are reading together a book by Rebecca DeYoung. It's published by Baker Books called Glittering Vices, and it's subtitled A New Look at the Seven Deadly Sins and Their Remedies. And so what we're doing is we're looking at the vices and coming back at it from the standpoint of the virtues, which Heather's talking about. And I would love to see more youth workers and parents read these things and teach from these things. It's not enough to just bring our kids to Jesus. It's what does it mean to follow Jesus once we've been brought to Jesus? And this is where the virtues and habits and developing, you know, spiritual disciplines and practice actually is, you know, Jamie Smith reminds us all the time, you know, these things transform us, and they do. So enough said from me there. I mean, I want to hear from the two of you some more if there's anything else that you would suggest, because the church is meant to be prophetic, and that means, you know, to be blunt, calling out the BS and pointing at it for what it is, you know, the lies that our culture would have us believe. So,
yeah. And I think in addition to talking about virtues and calling out. I mean, I love being direct, too much so, just like Walt sometimes. But I think in addition to those things, the church can no longer say we're just going to talk about discipleship in Jesus. I think we have to go into how do we live in this world? And so whenever I bring up the idea of how do we have a conversation? Do we need to teach you the art of communication, maybe some social learning types of conversations? I always hear the crickets chirp because I think they're not convinced that that's needed. But as I just observe adults and youth, I don't think that we know how to be with people anymore. Mm-hmm. We don't know. You mentioned this, Heather. We don't know how to look people in the eyes. Yeah. 95% of our social interaction is online. And so when you put kids in a room, and we all put kids in a room Wednesday night, Friday night, Sundays, what do we expect them to do? I don't think they know what to do a lot of times, especially for our young adolescent boys. And so just kind of the church venturing into the area of social learning and finessing a conversation would mm-hmm. be so empowering, I feel like, to our young people.
Yeah, I mentioned in the article, I highly recommend this book. So Sherry Turkle she writes on philosophy of technology, but she does so from the perspective of sociology and psychology. So how does technology affect our interactions? And it's her book, Reclaiming Conversation, I recommend to everybody because she talks about this. She talks about the lost art of conversation, the ability to sit in class and not be on your computer, not be on your phone, not doing five different things at one time. Nancy Piercy mentions the instructor, and I forgot what school she's at, who assigns her, she's a college instructor, assigns her students to go on a date. Students don't go on dates anymore. They don't know how to just go out and go on a date. And this reminds me of something. I had thought about this. I had written in an article for Salvo. It's just statistics on fatherlessness and what the effects of a fatherless home. And I think something that the church can empower dads to do and that dads should do is take your daughter on a date, show her how she should be treated so that she knows what to expect from these young men. So after doing that article, the influence of dads telling their daughters, I value you for these things, I value you for who you are, that has a profound influence. And so this is something where the church can encourage dads, and dads can encourage their daughters, and we can learn how to have a conversation, learn how to go on a date where the date involves, you know, actually talking to each other, actually interacting, maybe even talking about the food you're eating. You know, things like this, I think, are very helpful.
Hmm. Yeah, you've just brought up a crazy idea for youth pastors. Youth pastors around the nation are going to be like, okay, so exercise. We're all going to send our kids on dates 2x2. Yeah. Right. Pick up the pieces after that.
It would be interesting to see the parental response to that. I'd have a hunch there'd be a lot of youth pastors looking for jobs after that. I think it's brilliant. Yeah. You know, this is, and what you're talking about here are basic social skills that in years past, when we had a more unified, you know, worldview, for people who were people of faith and people who were not people of faith, they basically shared this worldview in which virtue was celebrated. And sometimes now I think virtues are actually have been flipped and are seen as vices by many in our culture. You know, these you absorb these things because it was just part of your DNA and your life and how families and communities and churches functioned. And I think there's something in there for youth workers as well that we need to listen to in terms of creating this kind of culture. I'll just say something with what we do here at CPYU. When we identify a cultural trend and we talk about it, what we try to do is convince people and encourage people to work together in their church community, in their youth ministry network, you know, elsewhere, to develop a threefold response that's very balanced. The first being the prophetic, what do the scriptures say to this? And the scriptures speak to all these things, obviously, and there's so much that needs to be undone that if we were studying and teaching the scriptures clearly, this would happen. So there's the prophetic, then there's the preventive. How do we keep this from happening? And this is where I think, you know, Heather, what you're talking about here, I want young parents, you know, moms and dads of children who are not yet born and who are preschool and who are, you know, young, to start thinking now. Don't wait till you see these things start to rear their ugly heads in your families and with your kids, you know, and then respond, but work to be preventive. You know, what are some preventive strategies? And then ultimately, redemptively, how do we pull out of this? And this is where I think, Jody, what you're talking about in terms of, you know, now we see it. We see this in our kids so clearly, or in our parents and, you know, the families in our churches. How do we reel them back in? And by the way, I don't want to leave, you know, when I talk about calling these things out, and I know the two of you are right here with us on this, that it's not just, you know, pounding people with truth, but showing the grace of Christ in the midst of that and balancing grace and truth. I think we've swung the pendulum way too far in our churches right now to grace, and it's the kind of grace Bonhoeffer talked about, which was a cheap grace. We equate that with love, but love is truthful, and so we have to push back. I know we're winding down here, and I guess what I'm going to ask is this. You know, Heather, Jody, both of you, are there any places that you would push us to go as we close out the podcast? You know, where can people go to learn more? Obviously, we're, you know, maybe there's some books. We've mentioned quite a few already, but is there anything that the two of you have found to be especially helpful that you would recommend based on, you know, not just your own studies, but your work, you know, the pragmatics of ministry with kids? Anything you would recommend that would be a great place to lead parents and youth workers?
Well, one of the things that Mike and I do, we have three kids, is we're committed to a ministry of hospitality. And I think, Heather, you mentioned before, they look at our actions, probably more so than what we're saying. And so every opportunity we get, we try to invite people over for a meal and just let them see, you know, the good and the bad, right, of how Mike and I interact as a couple, how we yell at our kids and try not to yell at them, how we love them, how we speak to our kids. And I wish we had done this even more in our youth ministry. It's easier to do this with our neighbors or with young adults or families that have similar age children. But just encouraging a ministry of hospitality in our churches, I think, would go a long way. Mm. Yeah, to raise up healthy girls and boys.
Yeah, I think along those lines, a ministry of hospitality and also a ministry of service. So I really like seeing our youth group deliver cards to some of our widows and shut-ins, or we're right by a nursing home. So I happen to be in a youth group with lots of people that are way more musically talented than I am. And so they can go sing or play an instrument. And so getting out of themselves and having a service mindset, I think, is something very helpful, very tangible. Going to feed people at a homeless shelter, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think that takes you out of this kind of self-centered virtual world of relationships that are based on what do you do for me, what do I do for you, and into this world of, you know, here are the weak, the vulnerable, the poor, the orphan, the widow, the people that Christ ministered to. I think this really helps bring what we teach in the church, brings it to a very practical level. Walton Mission Resources, and we've kind of named a lot of the resources that I really like. So Nancy Piercy's book, Love Thy Body, I recommend that. Salvo Magazine, of course, I recommend that. I write for them, but I do think that they have good resources. I'm trying to think good things for parents and youth, and I really like worldview type books. I recently read, and I think you had this guy on one of your podcasts. I recently read You Are What You Love.
Yes,
James Haysmith. Yeah, and so that might be good for parents. He's talking about liturgies and habits, again, talking about virtues and creating habits. So those are some of the resources yeah. I can think of.
Yeah, and I'm thinking here, too, I'll give Chris. Chris and I'll work after we get off on, because I was thinking the same down the same line, that the worldview books, we'll come up with a list of some books we'll recommend. That's a big part of my shelf, you know. I know you two probably have those as well. Thinking worldviewishly and in those categories are really a great thing to do. I noticed, by the way, those who are listening to the pre-recorded podcast, we actually will go on Facebook Live and people join us. And I noticed that, you know, I sat up a little straighter. David Noggle logged on and he was listening. So he's written a lot on worldview and he's someone we're a fan of with his worldview work. So that would be good. I want to read something here that I just read last night. I mentioned David Brooks' book, and you're talking about service. You're talking about, you know, both of you are talking about actually doing things. David Noggle says this, you know, his book, The Second Mountain, is actually about, you know, the first mountain in life is where we look for success. And I know, Heather, you've talked about this in the article, where we look for success. And it's just such a horrible narrative. Jody, you've seen it worked out. We all see it. This is what we're trying to address. He says the second mountain is when we get older and we start to realize that it's not success in the world's terms, but rather service, you know, where it's about others, becoming other-serving rather than self-serving, which is what so much of it, ironically, social media is all about self-service rather than other service. You know, why we call it, we should call it self-media, perhaps. But Noggle's writing about that, and it kind of goes back to his last book, The Road to Character, where he talks about how many of us, you know, work so hard to develop the resume virtues as opposed to the eulogy virtues, which are really the most important things. But he wrote this. Listen to this. He says, when people make generosity part of their daily routine, they refashion who they are. That's Jamie Smith, right? You are what you love, and the liturgies that we adopt and how they change us. He goes on, he says, the interesting thing about your personality, your essence, is that it is not more or less permanent like your leg bone. Your essence is changeable like your mind. Every action you take, every thought you have changes you, even if just a little, making you a little more elevated or a little more degraded. If you do a series of good deeds, the habit of other-centeredness becomes gradually engraved into your life. It becomes easier to do good deeds down the line. If you lie or behave callously or cruelly towards someone, your personality degrades, and it's easier for you to do something even worse later on. So I love this, developing these good habits. And to go back to what Jody said, one resource that came up as you talked about hospitality is Wes Hill's book, Spiritual Friendship. So Wesley Hill's book, Spiritual Friendship, is one that's helpful as well. I think we've reached the end. Any parting words from Heather or Jody? Anything lastly that's pressing that you want to pass on to our listeners here? And
you know, I want to point out that in a lot of ways, some of these things that girls are dealing with, even though it's playing out online, human nature is human nature. It's not... it's things that all of us struggle. We all want to be liked. We yes. all don't want to be alone. We all want others to admire us. We don't want to be rejected. So I want to encourage parents and pastors that, you know, even though this is playing out on this high-tech world and it's social media, the human nature concept is the same. And so, and in that sense, I think that's where you can make a connection. That's where you can know how to pray for your teen girls. It isn't as foreign as it feels.
And I think there's a lot of hope. And one of the values of doing youth ministry for two decades is you get to see teenagers across time. You get to see them when they entered as, you know, sixth graders, and then now they're married with raising their own kids. And change is possible when what families do and how they live their lives does make a difference in a teenager's life. It does affect their actions, their attitudes, their behaviors. And so I think there's a lot of great hope. It's not that we need to think of teenage years as a wave to ride through, or they'll just grow up, you know, because there's a lot of brain research about, oh, well, you know, the prefrontal cortex is not developed, so we just need to wait for it to develop. No, that's not the case. How we surround our kids with love, how we surround them with the correct worldview, with truth, with hospitality, with grace, with acceptance, with forgiveness, yet with sound teaching, all of that absolutely matters and makes a difference in their life's trajectory.
Yeah. Always remember, you know, I know when we talk about culture, it's so easy to forget. It gets lost in a lot of the bad news, but the good news is really good news. And the gospel is a gospel of hope, and it is freeing. And, you know, so much of this that we've talked about today, it's, you know, to use a metaphor or a visual, you know, analogy, it's like chains on our kids, and we just want to see them released. So love them well. Tell them the truth, as you know, we've heard here today. And trust the Holy Spirit to do the Holy Spirit's work, and realize that this may take time. I like what you just said, Jody. You know, it's like someone once said, sound travels slowly. What you tell a kid when they're 15, they don't hear it till they're 25. And, you know, maybe it's 35, 45, 55, who knows? And that's, you know, one of the great truths of youth ministry that can be so frustrating at times, but in parenting, but just, you know, work to hang in there and pray for your kids and tell the truth. Well, thank you so much to both of you for joining us. Heather, I really appreciate you writing this article. I will mention that the article you mentioned on fatherlessness is in the same winter 2018 edition of Salvo, I think. So we'll connect people to that as well. And as we said, everything we mentioned here will be listed on the website. Go to cpyu.org and scroll down underneath the player. You'll see links to all of this. Jody, thank you. And when you get
always
off,
a pleasure.
Yeah, have a conversation with Michael. Tell him I said hello, your husband. I love that guy. What a great guy. So thank you both for joining us. All of you who are listening, remember that you can subscribe to Youth Culture Matters wherever you access your podcasts. Please do that, and if you can leave a review, leave a positive review. That helps spread the word about what we're doing here. So thanks so much, and until we meet again, we'll talk to you on the next episode of Youth Culture Matters.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.